Dave, Sean Salisbury here to bring an authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.
To me, Tom Brady is the GOAT because he's done more with less than any player at that position we've ever had.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into Unpaved with Sean Salisbury. I'm Adam Sager. Follow the show on YouTube at Unpaved Sean Salisbury. Make sure you like and subscribe. A little bit later today, Sean's dealing with some travel issues. Weather around the country's insane. We got 10 inches of snow on Saturday, Sean, and now we just have another blizzard starting outside my window. So
yeah, I'm in Alabama.
Everybody had a happy Thanksgiving, though.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving. I hope it was awesome. Hope you get to celebrate with loved ones and family and friends. So that in a hotel room on the road. No, I'm not taking the Alabama job. Kalen DeBoer is safe. So he's good. And Auburn has a new head coach. So I'm business related, but on the road. So my background looks a little different. And thank you guys for adjusting to on the fly today with a little travel and rain out. You know, in Houston, it was raining hard. So getting to where you're going to go sometimes delayed, and I didn't want to make people wait. So we'll be back to noon tomorrow, Central, 1 o'clock Eastern. Segs, I hope you had a great Thanksgiving, brother. Some crazy-ass football. I still have no idea who a great team is on Sundays yet.
No.
I know who some good ones are. I don't. I'm not even sure if I know there's a great one on Saturday, although you're going to have – it's going to take a lot to beat Ohio State. Your Wolverines found out about that. I do have, when we get to the college segment, Segs, I think the most underutilized offensive – weapon in the country this year might have been your quarterback at Michigan with his skill set. I don't think it didn't feel like to me they called on it enough to use the legs and the arm both. That's just me. But I'm sure you have a strong opinion on that as well. But a lot going on from Lane Kiffin in the NFL. And tell you what, while your Michigan team's, and I know it was disappointing, your Bears team now is the number one seed in the NFC. So that's pretty cool, which I guarantee, Segs, if we'd put a futures on that, you'd be, I said, hey, Segs, December 1st, your team's going to be the number one seed in the NFC. You'd have looked at me and says, Sean, I love them, but get off the crack pipe, right? So here we are. But I hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving and got a lot of good food and some good drink and some good family, Matt. So it's good to be with you today.
For sure. Today we're going to start in the NFL. We're going to start with the Buffalo Bills beating the Pittsburgh Steelers 26-7. Josh Allen has not really a Josh Allen type game. Only went 15-23, 123 yards, touchdown, interception. Ran the ball 8 times for 38 yards. Did have a rushing touchdown, but they still find a way to win. Their defense shows up, and things aren't good in Pittsburgh with Aaron Rodgers, his wide receiver teammates, and the offensive side of the ball right now.
Segs, they don't have any if they have enough weapons, they're underachieving weapons. It's so weird how a guy as physical as their wide receiver, and you know who I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Why am I losing my mind?
DK Metcalf.
Yeah, Metcalf is as physical as he is. He should be throwing people into the stands that press him. Why is it so difficult for that big fella to get off press covers and create separation? Because he's fast and he's physical. But it's almost like he needs space to get into it. This is as good as their quarterback, you know, he's thrown more touchdown passes, I think, than anybody they've had since 2021, Segs, or last 7 or 8 or 19, whatever it is. I'm talking about 2020 or 2019. So they haven't had a lot of production at the quarterback position post Ben Roethlisberger. They just haven't. And even late in the Ben part of it, when they're getting ready to transition, you know, they just weren't that explosive offensively. you brought Rodgers in there, Russ Wilson, Justin Field, you can name them all the way up, and Mason Rudolph, all of them. Their weapons are very, very average at best. And if you're going to have average weapons at best, your defense better kick ass every single friggin' week. I'll tell you what, there's some offense. Segs, there's probably, we could probably go through all 32 teams and talk about the disappointment that every team has at some form of the game, some a lot less than others, some a lot more than others. But every team, there's not one team that's void of some form of, they got to get better at that, right? But there are some that are blatantly, even with their record, that are blatantly underachieving disappointment. The Pittsburgh Steelers cannot get through the playoffs if they go with that offense. They just can't. They don't scare you in the run game. They don't scare you in the passing game. And I understand Aaron's along in age, but should still have it. They don't scare you in the protection game. They don't scare you in the front seven game. They tell me something about the Steelers that you go into and you fear every week. TJ Watt, maybe?
Yeah.
Maybe TJ. I'm talking about as a group. You don't.
No.
I'm talking about consistency where they dominate, where you're used to it. I'll tell you what, I guess Mike Tomlin, because just the ability to get people to win more than you lose, Mike Tomlin has. But for a team like the Pittsburgh Steelers, I can never remember a time in my career that you didn't. When I say fear, I'm not talking about shaking in your boots.
Right.
But you go into them thinking they do this better than we do. They just do. And Pittsburgh's always had that. They don't this year. What do they do great better than anybody else? Name me something.
Nothing.
They don't. And whether it's quarterback play, whether it's wide receiver play, it's an underachieving average. And when I say average, I'm talking about extremely average group of perimeter playmakers. The Pittsburgh Steelers, in my mind, they're that team that gets into a college playoff that has, quite frankly, now I know if they get in, they had business getting in because they earned it. But I can tell you this, you know what they're going to be, Six? They will end up being a group of five team that gets in that may get an upset, but has no shot to win a Super Bowl.
Right.
That's the Pittsburgh Steelers. If they get in, will be your group of five representative. You know, James Madison, one of your group fives, no disrespect to you, but it's going to be hard for a group of five to go in and run four games in a row against the powerhouses every week. They may upset somebody, but you'd make a lot of money if you bet on them and they went and won it, because the chances are it's not going to happen. That's who it is, the Steelers. They may steal one in a playoff game. They ain't stealing three of them. They're not good enough. So have what you want in the hunt. That type of team, I can tell you right now, the Pittsburgh Steelers don't have one grouping on their team that you scare, that you're nervous about.
Right. Yeah, and you know, you talk about the quarterback and Aaron Rodgers, who's playing with a broken left wrist. You saw it was really taped up.
But he's still playing, so I got to judge him.
He's playing. He's out there, and he's making the throws. But he talked after the game, and we have the video, so I want you to react after you hear this. But he talked after the game kind of about what's going on behind the scenes, and is everybody preparing like they're supposed to. Let's listen to Aaron Rodgers here.
When there's film sessions, everybody shows up. And when I check through a route, you do the right route, you know? Like, John and I just were on the same page. I checked to his in-breaker and he ran out-breaker. John is a true professional, so I'm sure he's sick about that.
So, I mean, he's coming out and saying basically, like, when we're doing meetings, you got to be there. I don't know who's not there. When he calls a specific route change, an audible, you got to know what those are. And you can't go out when he's expecting you to go in, because it kills your quarterback, who, you know, at the NFL level, if you're expecting a guy to go in and he breaks out, you know, it's tough to make that quick adjustment because you're trying to read the defense. And if you're reading it one way, you're throwing it. You know, you're throwing that in breaking route because you think it's open. So what do you make of Aaron Rodgers and what's going on in Pittsburgh? And I think the more surprising thing is this is a Mike Tomlin-led team who we don't see a lot of this stuff. But yet, here we are.
I hope so. Yeah. Segs, can you still hear me?
Yeah.
You cut out. You can hear me? Okay.
Yeah.
What do I make of it? I'm going to tell you. Now, think about this. This is there's some veterans on this team. One is there's a couple things about this that I'm bothered by, and a couple things that I just deal with as a pro. One is We crushed Tua for loud talking his teammates.
Right.
At $55 million a year, loud talking, basically saying, not showing up to meetings. At. I don't know. I haven't looked at social media today. So for the most part, I don't know what the reaction is from Aaron Rodgers about calling him out. Because he got specific. Well, this guy runs it. I'm sure he's sick about it, but we got to know in breaking versus out breaking, right? Is it simply, and I ask this, I know the answer in my mind, is it simply skin in the game and career success that allow him to do this? And that's exactly what it is. Because if Peyton Manning says it, it's okay. If Warren Moon says it, it's okay. If a guy who's still on the climb trying to impress and produce and doesn't have any, you know, jewelry to produce from it, it's not okay. So there is a double standard, but a double standard that, quite frankly, Aaron Rodgers, whether you like it or not. Now, I may not agree with everything he says during it or how he says it, because he says it basically and at times, and I love Rodgers. You know this. I hold him in the highest regard as a player. But he does say stuff that is, and I confess he did it. I mean, that was all on them, not on him.
100%.
Every ounce of it. Now, I trust his guts to go out there. He's got enough MVPs for him to, as a leader, to call you out that a second-year guy who does it or a third-year guy does it. So people that are mad at that, deal with it. It's called leadership, and there's a lot of soft people out there that can't handle it. Oh, well. So I don't know what the reaction is on social media to that statement or his press conference, but I can tell you this, he's not wrong. Secondly, I'm trying to figure out, when you say that when we have a film session, show up, and when you have checks – now, knowing the checks, if you don't know the checks, dude, I can't take you off the bench. I'm just sorry.
Right.
It's inexcusable. That's not an Aaron Rodgers thing. That's a football. That's a coaching. Get out of the meeting. What in the world are you running a guy out there that doesn't know the difference? And I don't want to hear you can't hear. Where was that game being played, Segs? What was that game?
Pittsburgh.
Yeah. So in home, you shouldn't be jumping off sides. You shouldn't be missing audible checks. If you don't know, look at the quarterback, point to your ear like, I don't know. It's not that hard. And there's not 74 audible checks in an NFL game. If you're running this, they usually have one or two to go to that you should know. And if you don't, then guess what? You ought to be you take 2 weeks off and find something else to do. So I'm with him there too. Here's what part I don't understand. Are we talking about that they're having meetings, regular team or group meetings that you're required to show up for as a professional athlete? That's your job that guys aren't showing up for? Is this telling me that during – are these sessions away from the practice complex where – Aaron, you know, the voluntary, hey, guys, the voluntary mandatory, we're showing up. I'd love to have you there, but they don't show up. Or is this, hey, the group's together. It's under football hours, and people are just like it's sitting there playing dominoes or not showing up and showing up late to practice. Then that's a coaching issue, and they better get to that. And that's a player issue. But their play looks like a group of guys that are just showing up late anyway, the way they perform. Right, so while it's not just the receivers, there's a lot going on, or the people who are involved in the audible checks. Aaron's not far off. He, quite frankly, people may not like it. He's been in the league long enough to know to critique it. I don't have a problem with that. But I do have a problem with a meeting schedule. Sigs, when did we get to a point in sports that when your boss says, listen, here's what time the meeting is, and you don't show up and you're on team time? Well, I don't get it. I've never understood it, because even back in the day with all the CBA and collective bargaining, when they said it was voluntary and you didn't show up, you knew you were being side-eyed, man. Voluntary was mandatory.
Right.
Now you can't make them show up and fine them because, well, voluntary is voluntary. If you try to make them show up, you'll get fined a draft. You'll get fined as a team and you'll get docked a draft pick. So when is, I just have never understood. So basically, you're basically telling me the perimeter, the average perimeter people in Pittsburgh are doing it their way as opposed to the way they're supposed to, and their performance shows that.
Yeah.
So I've never understood. Can you? I can't imagine. Hey, our quarterback meeting's at 8 o'clock on Wednesday morning, and you show up at 8:20.
Right.
Well, I've never understood the kind.
It's a lack of respect.
That. Yes, it's not only a lack of respect. You're fucking fired, dude.
Right.
What do you? Can you imagine doing that at your corporate sales job? You just show up. I don't care if you're the leading sales job, the dog on the you're the big ball. Big dog, you sell more than anybody else, but you just decide you're showing up 30 minutes late all the time, or you're not showing up at all. But then again, that guy wouldn't be the lead sales guy. That guy shows up.
Right.
So there's a direct correlation with this. I've just never understood. What is it? Screw your player empowerment on any level. There's a certain point in time, your subordinate is your quarterback coach, your coordinator, your head coach. And if the head coach says Aaron's in charge of the meeting, then he's your boss for that meeting. You show up. Right. I've just never understood the concept. I'll show up when I want. I'll fall asleep in my truck. I'll throw up in Las Vegas if that really happened. I'll miss curfew. When did we get to a point where it was commonplace? And that if you question that guy, you're the bad guy, not the guy who's missed the meeting. Screw those players, man. I'm so tired of the overemphasis on player empowerment. And if you're going to do it the way you think it's supposed to be done, but your team sucks ass offensively, then maybe you need to change something. Steeler fans, you deserve better than that too, because that's a blue-collar town that shows their ass up to work.
Right.
I've just never understood the concept that I'll show up when I want, but I'm on payroll. Who runs stuff like that? I can't believe that Mike Tomlin would let that happen. I cannot believe that. And if Mike is, then maybe Mike needs to move to another team and rebuild that one because he's a great coach. I don't believe that Mike Tomlin thinks it's cool for you just not to show up to meetings. And if they're not showing up, Aaron better just, you know what, freeze their ass out then.
Yeah.
They're not good enough not to show up. So I don't know what that is, but I've never understood it. You got a job, the boss says be there at 8. It doesn't mean be there at 8:20. I don't understand the whole concept.
I think it's definitely a discussion for another day, but I think that discussion is coming about Mike Tomlin moving on from the Pittsburgh Steelers and being the coach at another team. But Sean, let's move to, you know, we talked, I kind of said it facetiously on Wednesday when we last spoke, but then it happened. The Chicago Bears go out, they bully the Philadelphia Eagles, and then the Rams don't show
we
up.
They both had them covering that spread too, say.
Yes. Yep. And they came out and they played really well. And then you have the Rams go out to Carolina and lose. Now the Bears are the number one seed in the NFC, and you know their defense is getting takeaways, which is the big difference right now for that defense. Because, I mean, Sean, they don't get after the quarterback. Like, they do not hit the quarterback ever, yet they're still making plays. They forced Nashawn Wright forced the fumble on the tush push, which now Philly fans are bitching that he should have been blown dead, which shut up. But
they'll let the play go longer right. when they need the first down. Right.
Exactly.
Save it.
Exactly.
Yeah, save that.
But right now the Bears stand plus 17 in the turnover department. Next closest, the Texans, the Rams, and I don't even know who else. One other team. I think Tampa Bay. They're all plus 9. They're second place. Bears are at 17.
They're doubling them up. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, it just tells you, and then the run game. That's the biggest difference in this Bears team is this offensive line is arguably the best in football. They ran for 280 yards on the Eagles, who have one of the best defensive lines in football. I mean, Jonah Jackson, Drew Dahlman, and Joe Tooney made Jalen Carter and Jordan Davis their bitch on last Friday because, I mean, they just pushed them around like it was easy. And the Bears go out there, and they dominated Philly in Philly. And you can see why there's trouble in Philly right now, because even though A.J. Brown had a big game, nobody else did anything offensively. And defensively, they weren't good at all. Outside of one play that, you know, you could argue the offensive lineman needs to hit the defensive lineman so he doesn't get the interception, or Caleb throw it a little bit higher. I mean, that's the only play that defense made. So now here the Bears sit at the number one seed. And Sean, the crazy thing is, this passing game, it's not at 50% of what Ben Johnson wants it to be. And if they start picking it up through these last few weeks of the season, I mean, as crazy it is to say, they're scary going into the playoffs, because on defense, they're only getting healthier.
Sags, you know what blows my mind? Is you're right. You said the whole time you're talking, I'm listening, and I'm also thinking, wait till they actually learn how to play offensively with this head coach. And there's so many things about this game, the good for Chicago and the bad for Philly, that stick out. Let me start with Philly. I like to end with the good. One is, I can't believe that this team showed up in their own building with that shitty energy. I saw energy on two series with 9 minutes to go. In the third quarter, I think it was, they came out of halftime. They went down the field, got Barkley involved. Mm-hmm. Hurts used his feet. They might have had a penalty along the way. I think he made a throw to Devontae. So they had about four or five different bandwidth type plays. The energy went through the roof, and then they went in and scored. What was it? The back shoulder throw.
Yeah.
Was it the one he came back and got? But the energy. Then they went back and and the Bears found a way to match it. Then at the end of the game, when they were playing faster to try and get in there and score, and they did. And then Nick Sirianni, you go for two.
Oh, that's
listen.
That's a big deal right now on Twitter and stuff.
Yeah, but you can't. You cannot. You basically cut off your hands, nose despite cut off your nose despite your face. But you took the energy right out of your team because here for people, well, you know that card says go for it when you're inside analytics. Of 8. No, that card doesn't stop the card. This is why analytics are. I'm telling you, Segs. We went from all feel to in football. When people say analytics are new, no, they're not new. Those are called tendencies. We used to call them tendencies. Right. You're right, playing man coverage 80% of the time in the red zone. I'm going to run man beaters, and the other 20% we'll deal with it, right? But now we use this, the metrics and the analytics and the right stuff. And when it gets to this, you have to do this because that they say you're supposed to do this. We went from feel and game planning to analytics through all sports. Shoot threes. Don't bunt. You know, all the things I get, but there's time when you need to bunt. Guys on second, there's what, get him to third, there's no outs, get him to third, however you could do it. That's about, strikeout. Strikeouts don't matter. Well, to me, I hit a ground ball, I got a better chance of the guy booting it than I do walking back to the dugout with a strikeout. So, and then in football, and I'm thinking, okay, two scores. I get seven. Now it's a one-score game. I just need to get to eight. So I kick the extra point. Now it's one series. My guy's energy defensively, get one stop. My guy's energy offensively, we get one. We'll go down. Then the momentum will carry us over. We'll tie this bitch and we'll go forward.
Right.
But now you take that risk. And I understand you're looking at a Carter. Man, we got a feel. We just scored. Let's use that momentum. Well, it's great momentum until somebody punches you in the face and gets a stop on a two-point conversion. Now there's 3 or 4 minutes to go. Segs, you know what I'm thinking? I'm now as a player, I'm thinking, okay, now how many timeouts we got? Not only do we got to get a stop and go score and get a two-point conversion, we got to get another stop again. So you've added tremendous pressure on your team to actually have to go two lengths of the field possibility and a two-pointer instead of one. Or at least the second length, now go get a field goal to kick it and hope that in cold weather he's going to make it. So that's one in Philly. On the Chicago side, Segs, you don't lose games in this league. And I was so shocked at the lack of put your foot on their throat. I told you last week, Segs, before on Wednesday, I said, I will be surprised. I think the Eagles will probably win, but that point spread, Bears are going to get inside that number. We both, like I said, thought it. And I said, there's no way after what happened, your embarrassing loss to your rival, the Cowboys, one of your in the division, that you're going to come out and play, blah. Well, Barkley never got going until the one drive. He had a couple runs. They never got him going. Their offensive line got pushed around, and that hasn't happened in Philly in a while.
Right.
Your defensive front, without getting a lot of sacks all year long, is still doing enough to cause problems and create new line of scrimmage. They're playing physical. You ran the ball better than they did. Even though there wasn't a lot of plays, you made the plays necessary when they did, meaning Chicago, and they dominated the line of scrimmage. And when you do that, you win games. And the Chicago Bears, and here's what's crazy. They're not doing what Myles Garrett's doing at killing quarterbacks or the Denver Broncos. The quarterback, quite frankly, is still with his talent still doesn't match the production yet. It does at times. I'm talking about the consistency. Now, he'll do something off schedule. You say, this dude is stupid good. And then all of a sudden, he'll do something. He'll say, where was he throwing that ball? And he's still growing into it. And you know how I feel about his skill set. But he's not dominating every game where they're 27 to 32 for 295. You know what I'm saying, Sex? Making plays at the right time. But they don't even right now. I can guarantee you in a private session with Ben Johnson having a beer, and you say, where's your passing game at in your offense? Or just the offensive bandwidth. He'd probably say it about 45%.
Oh, he was asked today about it, and he basically said it's shit. Like, he said the passing game has been shit, and he knows it's a developing product. And
they're the one seed because they're learning how to win.
Coming out.
So they're learning how to win because they're making them – they're some time in it. They're just not most of the time in it.
Right.
If they have the passing engine – they do have the thought process. If they have the passing production that Stafford has – that the Rams, that they had that. This team right now, Segs, they'd be two games out in front of home field advantage and cruising. But after all that, it just goes to show you what the coach, the believability, leadership, and making plays at the right time. You don't have to make them all the time, but you got to make them at the right time. And they're leaving, they're leaving 10 points a game on the board.
Yeah.
And Ben knows
it. Easily. Yep.
And they're the one seed, which either tells us man, the Bears are going to be something hell to deal with, not just this year, but moving forward when they actually learn how to play. And then secondly, it also tells you, man, there's no great team in the NFC. Philadelphia's not great. The Rams came back down to earth for a second. Look what happened when your MVP throws a couple picks that aren't there and lays one on the ground, as good as Stafford's been. Even you'll get beat by Carolina, and guess where that game was?
Nope.
Yeah, so you can't, you got to win on the road, got to win at home. And even teams like, and hell, Carolina's not some, they're not chopped liver. They're down on Tampa for that division. Nope. So you knew going in, you weren't going in to play a bye week, that the Carolina was real. And so your Bears have earned it, Sags. I don't know if they're going to stay there.
Right.
I can damn well tell you, nobody's going into their game thinking, oh, this is a bye week, because they are controlling the line of scrimmage. And they're doing one hell of, for a team that's not dominating in sacks and dominating quarterback play, they're rolling through because they're making plays at the right time.
Right. And
I still, I'm still tripping over Ben Johnson's decision. I mean, not Ben, Nick Sirianni's decision. Yeah. I am. That literally, for a smart guy, you are basically saying that I'm, that's like Sigs rolling. I don't even know. That's like betting $10 million on one number on Russian roulette, you know, on the roulette table.
Yeah.
Not Russian roulette, on the, not Russian roulette. You don't want to bet that either.
On the roulette table, you can.
What are you saying? Yeah, the number 17 black, and you put it on 17, you're betting your whole life savings on one number, and you're saying, oh, man, we're going to get it. Sirianni, in this case, he's not in Vegas, but you're playing. What were you thinking to say, well, why don't I just do it the logical way? When you can't think under those circumstances like that, it makes absolutely no sense. You took a win or a chance at a win. I'm not saying a win, a chance, right out of your team's hands, because you just added a possession by making a stupid decision. I just didn't get it.
It's something that
your analytics card. It's yes, ridiculous. It's
been a hot topic on Twitter and amongst, you know, NFL circles, because Greg Olsen, the tight end, who's, you know, Fox's number two guy, analyst behind Tom Brady, I guess, he's been all out there saying, you know, that was the right decision, and this is why. And he, you know, he's explained himself. So maybe we can get more into that as the week goes, because I think it is interesting. And I'm with you 100%. You make it an 8-point game, and then you push that 2-point conversion off till you need it. And in my opinion, that's how it's always been done. And now, yes, I know these nerds have come in and got to change some stuff.
And I get what Greg's saying. If you're chasing three touchdowns, like eight, right, six, 24 yeah, points, then I got to get eight, eight, and eight. I 100% get it. But I'm not chasing that. I'm chasing 15 points. Right, Sags? I'm chasing basically 15 points. So why not give me the seven and know I only need one when I got to get both? Right now, I just needed one. And I think Greg Olsen's the number one anywhere on any broadcast.
Yeah, I agree.
But under those circumstances and the way the game was going, that should have been, do it. Hopefully you get a Super Bowl caliber stop, and then you go down at eight, and then we'll deal with whatever happens in overtime if we get our own stop.
Yeah.
I thought it was wrong, and I thought that he took the ball out of his own team's hands. And I normally wouldn't say that about a coach, because they know their team better. That was the wrong decision. It just simply was. When he was making it before they were unsuccessful doing it.
Right.
You give your team a chance to win, because that part of you could have controlled. An extra point, hopefully he makes it, kicks it. But you can't control, when am I going to get a second possession down nine now? You can't control that. But I could have controlled what my decision was on that single point play, as opposed to a 2-point. The 2-pointer wasn't going away. I was going to need it at some point. Why not emotionally let my team think that it's only a one possession game, as opposed to a two possession game, which they had to do?
Yeah, I completely am 100% with you. As crazy as the NFL week, or 4 days, 5 days, whatever it was, from Thursday all the way till tonight, Monday, with all the games through the holiday weekend, college was insane. We had some crazy games. We had a couple upsets. We had, you know, what's going to happen with the playoff rankings. But the biggest story of the college weekend is Lane Kiffin. And we talked about, what could he do? Where would he go? Is it Florida? Is it LSU? Is it stay at Ole Miss? And then he made it such a damn process of, you know, trying to get his way, but also leave. So he announces he's leaving. He's going to LSU. He will not coach in the college football playoff, assuming they get there. He signs a 7-year, $91 million deal. Also in that contract, LSU will pay Lane Kiffin any of the Ole Miss bonuses for them being winning in the playoffs. So LSU basically kind of is a middle finger to Ole Miss. Like, hey, we took your coach and we're going to pay him, which you guys wouldn't because you wouldn't let him coach, which 100% the right move by Keith Carter. Like, fuck you, Lane Kiffin. You are not running my Ole Miss program and you are not running the LSU program at the same damn time. You want to leave, get your shit and get out. And I think Keith Carter was 100% right. And all these ESPN people, Kirk Herbstreit and everybody else saying, oh, Ole Miss should do the right thing and let him coach. Fuck no. And Nick Saban said it. Nick Saban told Lane to pack his bags when he had got another job before the national championship. So what are you talking about? Like, there's just so much shit there that, you know, when it comes to ESPN and the SEC and Lane Kiffin and their buddies and all this shit, it's just such a bad look. But what was your first takeaway when it came out that Lane was leaving and going to LSU?
Well, the longer it took, then you knew he was leaving.
You knew it.
That's the way. Yeah. And well, I probably shouldn't have to qualify that. I will again, you know, I love Lane. I've known him for a long time since he was in high school, as I've said on here before. But I also know that I wouldn't matter if it was my son, my best friend, if it was you, if it was my mom. If I think the decision is wrong or I would have done it somewhere different, I'm going to let you know. It doesn't mean I hate you. I love Lane. Right. Hell, I'll go stand down there in the sidelines and watch him coach. I don't have a problem with that. But getting to this, Eggs, it was handled poorly. And I had said all along that he's matured. This should be handled good. Unfortunately, this took a step back or 10. Think about how quickly you go from being the biggest hero, most beloved coach in college football right now. He is. Mm-hmm. I mean, whether it's beloved because you love him on social media, beloved because what he's done to turn around Ole Miss, how all those things, that how quickly a program can turn on you, and I get why they would. He didn't leave to go to a Big Ten school. He didn't leave to go coach SC again. He left to go down the interstate at LSU and then wanted to coach him and then was going to pluck their players and then wanted to take the coaching staff. And then he's going to go recruit against him. Yet he wanted to finish out what he started. If you wanted to, first of all, let me backtrack with this, not backtrack, back up. The NC2A has a scheduling problem.
Yes. That 100%.
This can be handled and take all this away. If you move this later for every team. Well, Sean, then teams are behind. And
no, you just moved the recruiting. You moved the signing day back to
move everything. Move it all together.
Right.
Yes. Move it all together. So a coach who's been there isn't faced with $100 million decision to leave, because even people that are bitching probably are going. A lot of them. I'm not saying everybody. I would have loved to see him stay and see it through, because he's built it. Not just see the game. I'm talking about make the decision to stay and match the money and stay and go kick ass, because he's built something really special. All that credit that he gets for building that, deserved. But all the blame he gets for leaving in the middle of it and the way it left, deserved. And listen, it's one of those where you make a $100 million decision, you're like, damn, this is awesome. But then when you wake up the next morning, I promise you, you're still asking yourself, was it the right one? Because you know now you went from beloved to, you thought you were a heel coming out of Tennessee. Why did you get a load of this one? Because Tennessee wasn't 11-1 getting ready to play in a playoff. So I get why Lane went. I hate the way it was handled. I would have done the exact same thing Ole Miss did. And you know my affinity for Herbstreit and the rest of the group. But I can tell you this right now. There's no damn way with Nick Saban that he's coaching. Right. And then he's going to turn around. While he's coaching me during recruiting season and early signing, he's going to be signing players that he wants at Ole Miss to LSU. That's a conflict. It's like being the general manager for one NFL team and the head coach for another.
Right.
At the same time, you can't do it. And so they did right. They will handle their business just fine as a coach. They'll find a way to get through it, and the players will rally. They, once again, no seat at the table. I'm sure some of the players wanted him. I'm sure some are bummed that he's gone, and I'm sure some are like, screw him, we're going to go on without him. I'm sure you get all of that, regardless of what they're saying. So the kid gets screwed because they are not fully equipped, even though I think they'll be fine. I don't know if they're going to say, I don't know where it's going to take them in the playoff. I know this. I'm sure they'll play their hearts out. Whether they can get it all organized enough to have it ready to go, who knows? Is a win taken out of their sails? I hate the phrase, but we use it all the time. Is it more motivation now? Will they be as prepared, or is it less? Oh, we did all this. And if you're Lane, you're like, damn, I was 11-1. I got a chance at the ring. I'd want to finish it, but I wouldn't have let it. If I'm the AD, I would have said, listen, dude, you made the decision to move on. Okay, we're moving on without you. So I hated the way it went down. I get Lane's point of wanting to go to that because he thinks, obviously, he's got a better chance to win a national championship at LSU than he does at Ole Miss. Whether Ole Miss or you and I believe it, he does.
Right.
And history would say that's fair. But the way it went down, and I love it. And you know what? People, you know, saving screenshots from all these guys when they promise they're not going to leave and they leave. You know how that's going to go. That follows you around forever. And he'll probably going to get the reputation of looking for the next coolest situation in the world. Okay, let me ask you this. He's got LSU. What if all of a sudden the next big job shows up for $125? He goes 11-1 3 years in a row, doesn't win a title. And all of a sudden, I don't know, SC comes back into the fray. I'm just asking. Texas, I don't.
Alabama.
Texas, Longhorns, right. Does he go for $125 million for that gig? I don't know. Like I said, it's hard for me because I love Lane. I 100% am all on Ole Miss's side on why they're doing what they're doing. But I understand how you couldn't turn it down. You think you got a better chance there. That's his decision. But the NC2A's got to get this fixed. But also, just the way it was handled, if you're an Ole Miss fan, I feel you. I do. Even though I'm a Lane Kiffin fan, I love him. But I couldn't agree with the way it went down. And he stepped into a pile of gold, but on the way there, he had to trudge through a lot of shit, man, and he's going to catch a lot of it.
And if you watched the Egg Bowl and you were paying attention to social media right after it on Friday, you knew. He told you he was leaving he approached that young reporter on the field who used the reference of you can't turn a hoe into a housewife. And, I mean, when I saw that and I went back and I listened to the clip when he said that on his podcast, Ben Garrett is his name. I laughed for 20 minutes because there is not a better phrase to use for a guy. Yes. Then you can't turn a hoe into a housewife for Lane Kiffin. It is perfection because it's the guy that's always got his eye somewhere else. But yet he's telling you right there, no, baby, I'm good. I'm staying with you forever. You're my forever girl. Nope. Or you're for my forever guy. Nope. But I'm also looking over here. And when I think something else better comes along, oh, I'm gone. See ya. I don't care what I said to you.
Siggs, let me ask you a question. Take the money out of it, which you can't. Because Ole Miss was going to get close. They would have, you know,
they would have matched. Guaranteed would have matched it.
Yeah, exactly. And let's say they matched the $25 to $30 million he's going to get for NIL, right?
Right.
Why would you leave? I know it's a rhetorical. Tell me the reasons he'd leave.
I think when you look at it from just the non-money, it's LSU has some of the best facilities in the country, if not the best facilities.
It's the toughest place to play in the world.
Yeah. You know that the brand is much bigger than Ole Miss at LSU. Your recruiting base is much better at LSU. And I'm not one sitting here saying Lane shouldn't have left. I could care less where he goes and coaches, but I'm looking at it from the standpoint of the way he did it was 100% wrong. And
agreed.
When all things are said and done, this is a guy who if you want to go just Power Five coaching in 16 seasons, he's had 4 10 win seasons. He's never won a conference. He's never won a national title. I don't know that he's ever gone to a conference championship game.
So, as an assistant, but not
an assistant coach, stuff he's done with. But that took Nick Saban's team to, you know, get him on there and do some stuff.
Pete Carroll's.
So I look at it as I think he's a really good coach. I would have done what he'd done. But in the end, this is a guy who hasn't won shit. And he's being pumped up like he is Nick Saban. Like he is, you know, Urban Meyer, like he is,
and he's getting paid like it. So you know, you get to the point where you start to believe everything that they're saying about you because, well, they're paying you like it, right?
And like you said, how does LSU know that in 4 years, or what if, you know, in 3 years, Sarkisian's gone? There's Texas. Texas is arguably the biggest brand in college football. There's that hoe you can't turn into a housewife with his eye looking somewhere else. saying, oh, what can I get here with better recruiting, better brand awareness, bigger across the world? Oh, what if I can go there?
Think about this, Ziggs. We're probably two more 10, 11 win seasons away from somebody calling it Lane Kiffin Field in Ole Miss. Honest to God, naming right. a building, putting a statue up. We are 3 years away from basically he owns Oxford. He's mm-hmm. renting Baton Rouge,
right.
unless he wins the national title. Because 10 wins, you'll keep your job forever at Ole Miss. That's no disrespect to Ole Miss. I'm just talking about brand.
Yeah.
10 wins, 11 wins LSU without a national title in 3 or 4 years. Guess what? They're also looking for the next coach because you just can't quite get him over the hump. I think Lane's a brilliant offensive mind. I think he's a brilliant salesman. I think he is matured in a lot of ways. But I can tell you this. Unfortunately, there's certain things. Lane likes the next prettiest girl. Yes. I'm not talking about his personal life. I'm talking about his job. Yes. Yep. That I think he gets antsy after a while. And in truth, he should have a better chance to win a national title at LSU or Ole Miss. But with that, guess what? Comes the should have pressure. Not that he's shying away from pressure. He knows what he's in for. Like I said, I'm with you. Go coach your ass off. I'll root for you while you're playing on Saturday. I didn't root for it to go down like this, and there is no way in hell. As much as I like him, if I was his AD, he would not have been coaching for Ole Miss. If you want to start where you finish, you got to stay and finish it. You don't get the double dip. Well, and I love him. This was the right decision by Ole Miss, and it was the wrong way to handle it with Lane and the way they did. But I'm not telling him it's a wrong decision for him to go to LSU. I wouldn't tell anybody that for their job if they felt it was a better job for them. I feel for the Ole Miss fan base and the players on there. Because there's no way you can losing staff and stuff and getting that ultimatum put on by him. There's no way you can be as prepared as you were with the rhythm and the continuity you had all year. The continuity's been disrupted. So now you're going to have some out-of-body experiences by your players.
Right.
And maybe that's what you need to win a national title anyway. But they will be at a disadvantage. How they deal with it and how they handle it, we'll see. Lane's richer, but he went from on Wednesday – as beloved as there was in college football coaching, with laughs, fun, the rest of it, to on Sunday, the most hated coach in college football right now,
yep.
And
one other thing you just said that kind of made me think. You said he's, just a few seasons of continuing what he's doing right now, having them in the conversation, in the college football playoff, fighting for a national championship away from buildings, maybe the field being named after him. Go to LSU. Your teams are being stacked up against the, 2019 LSU Tigers with Joe Burrow, Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, that put up historic numbers and won a national championship. If you're not as good as that team, LSU fans will always have something to say about your team. At Ole Miss, you're basically a god there. LSU, you're just another coach until you win them something. And then once you win them something, you got to do it again or you're gone. So,
Segs, think about the star that was shining for Lincoln Riley when he went to USC.
Yeah.
He's still there and he's got a chance, but it's dimmed a little bit because they haven't won a national title, right. Even though they win some games, right? They're not in the, but go another year or two without making the playoffs, Segs, and guess what's going to happen? I hate to say it, but Lincoln will be coaching somewhere else because they just get tired because the expectation. And yes, Marin 84. USC was Kiffin's dream job. When he got fired on the tarmac and he's had a historic job with the Raiders and Tennessee's a hell of a program. So this is his dream job now.
Yeah.
This is his dream job now.
There's
just like I'm sure
dream
Texas,
job out there.
You bet your sweet ass there is. You bet your sweet ass.
You talked about it earlier. Ohio State showed up. They beat up Michigan on both sides of the ball. It looked like what Michigan has done to Ohio State the previous four games. That's exactly what this game looked like. Michigan, I don't think Sherrone Moore is the guy. And I tweeted out something that I was hoping maybe you'd see and respond to. And I know you've been off doing some stuff with the holidays. That
I will look at it.
If I'm Michigan.
Was it the one segs where you talked about the three coaches? Did I see that? Do you mention coaches in there?
Maybe.
Anyway, go ahead and finish.
This was one that you would have noticed. I said that Michigan should start behind the scenes stuff, talking, maybe seeing if Lincoln Riley wants to leave LA and come to a place where Bryce Underwood, he is that guy. He's very, very good. Yes. Does he have some stuff to learn? Yes. Is he a freshman that, you know, still isn't layering the ball well, doesn't have much touch? Yes.
But he's 100%. Got raw talent like Caleb Williams.
The talent is there. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, that's what I threw out there. But yes, Ohio State looked every bit like Ohio State has this season. They are going to be tough to beat in the playoffs. And I think the difference, I know they won the national title last year, but I think the difference in what makes this team so much better than last year's Ohio State team,
which is saying something, because they're pretty damn good. They dominated the playoffs last year.
And it's kind of funny you say that, because it's Julian saying that kid has it. And when you look at him, his arm, you know, he doesn't have any real muscles on his arms. He, you know, he's not this big overpowering quarterback, but that kid is really, really fucking good. And he can lead them for the next couple years. And he's going to make it tough. Him and Jeremiah Smith are going to make it tough on a lot.
Talk about a kid who doesn't even know how to play yet either. He's still learning, meeting, saying.
Yeah.
And when Knowles left, everybody thought defense could take a step back because, well, Patricia's an NFL guy. Their defense is every bit as good, if not better. Yep. When your quarterback's efficient and smart and understands ball placement, and you've got the perimeter speed that Ohio State always has, and now you're dominating in a front seven, and you got to, and another thing they always have is a pretty decent back end normally, Ziggs, and their mix of run pass. The remedy, I mean, the solution is, how do you stop them? Well, you can't stop them one way, but for them, that's the formula that goes and wins another national championship. And I like the way Ryan Day handled it. He goes, "We're going to win with class." Was very, you know, the way he said it. He knew he was up against it, the pressure, but they manhandled Michigan, like you said, Ziggs. It looked like the last 4 or 5 years the way Michigan's done them. This team is really, really good. And as far as Coach Moore goes, Ziggs, I think he's a really good assistant and a guy you want on your staff. I just think that there's something missing from the head coaching position. Yeah. And I think that they should take a long look at some, they should explore some options, even though I think he's a good coach. I don't think he's a great head coach, but I think he's a guy you want as an assistant on your staff. I have a lot of respect for him.
Yeah, it's very weird because I'm with you on that. I would love to keep Sharon Moore on the staff. Now, would
they need more explosiveness in the offensive game, and they need to use the quarterback's bandwidth. I thought the biggest letdown, Ziggs, for me was, even though he's a freshman and he's young, so are a lot of guys. But freshmen have come in a lot of times, and they're with some unique talent. I think they underuse his skill set. That's just me. I do. I think they underuse his talent. And he was a little overwhelmed in the game when they got down. But a lot of that is, you can't turn it on and off like a light switch against the best team in the country. You got to have a plan and stick to it. I think that they didn't put the ball in his hand enough to do the things that, at least his ability, I think they're missing a step or two in really tapping into both his arm and his legs.
It feels like, and you know, I've watched Chip Lindsey from afar, you know, where he's been before, and he comes to Michigan this year. But it just feels like he was neutered from the jump. This is how we play Michigan football. Well, that only works when it's Jim Harbaugh and they're coaching it day in, day out, running his shit. Sharon Moore isn't that guy. He needs to, you know, yeah, you could still be Michigan, still have your great offensive line and your running backs, which they just continue to churn out every single year. But you get a kid like Bryce Underwood, who has all this talent, you find an offensive coordinator that you think can open that up even more, and then you just let him go. Don't be in there nitpicking. And it feels like Sharon Moore was nitpicking this offense the entire season, putting his stamp on it.
Sags, here's what you can't do. First of all, as a coach, your job is to coach to your talent, not make the talent adjust to your game plan.
Right.
You just, sometimes you're physical, sometimes you're a little more finesse. You'd like both, but you have to coach to the skill set of the guys you got. And the kid's got skills, but we didn't get to see enough of him this year because, well, they put a governor on him. That's one. And you're right. You go to Michigan, the first thing we think about Michigan football, history and physicality. Well, guess what, Ziggs? While being physical is one thing, the problem is with finesse and the passing game, if you're not adept in making that a regular occurrence for you, it's, well, for me, I know my strength. That's easy at Michigan. But the weakness is when you get behind and have to play that kind of football against a team that's as physical as you, are you finesse enough to make those throws if you got to throw it 10, 12 times in a row or get on the edge? And they've proven that right now, now I'm not saying talent, but their approach to it isn't. Because you along the way are going to run into somebody who can knock you out too that's just as physical. Yep. And when they do, then the next thing we go to is, well, okay, well, coach, sure. How about their perimeter people? Whose perimeter people were better in this game?
Oh, by far, OSU.
Right. And you can't, you know, certain teams, you know, like, listen, when the Rams player, when Lincoln Riley's offense or when Mike Leach, I always knew I was going to get something out of them. They're going to score. But some of those teams couldn't stop anybody, like my Trojans against, you know, when Caleb was there. Well, it's the same thing here. Oh, I know Michigan can handle physical. But then when you run into a team who can do both and they spread you out, they take you out of your physical game. And the problem is you can't match their finesse with either team speed or approach to scoring. If the game's in the teens, take Michigan all day, every day in the 20s. When the game starts to creep up and the team has 25, 24, 30 points, and you're in a shootout, right now offensive staff and the way they're calling games, they don't allow for it. They put a ceiling on the quarterback. Yeah. They don't have a retractable roof on their offense, and that's a problem with Michigan.
I will say one last thing. Jeremiah Smith did not have control of that ball as he went.
That's a fact.
That should have been a touchback. And I would have just liked to see how the game would have went.
The foot hit the out of bounds when he regained possession.
And he clearly didn't have control of it. So, I mean, everybody in the world was screaming that should have been a touchback. But, hey, you still got to play what's in front of you. And Michigan did not play well enough. Something we're going to do every couple days whenever it is called for is the Wrath of Sean. Sean, today your Wrath of Sean is Jerry Jeudy, Shedeur Sanders on the sideline getting after it. And I'm going to let you go and then I'll give my opinion on it.
No, but go ahead. Say,
they're going at it.
Tell me what you feel. I want to hear what you think. I do.
I don't mind a veteran getting on a rookie about something that he feels passionate about. And I love the fact that Shedeur stood up and said, no, this is what I see. And this is what you should be doing. I actually like this. I know everybody's trying to tear Jeudy down for it. But I, if you're a young player, what's better than a veteran coming up to you saying, hey, no, this is how we do it. This is this route or whatever they're yelling at each other about. And then I like the rookie standing up and saying, hold on. I ain't got a problem with you coming at me, but this is what I see. This is why I'm doing it this way. And this is what, you know, I was told by the coach or whoever of how we do it. So I honestly didn't have a problem with any of this. And I like it from both sides, in my opinion.
I love passion, Jeudy's passion. I think it's sometimes from a distance, we make it look like he was yelling at him, telling him, you suck and you got to do what we do. That he was informing him that this is, it looked like it was a Shedeur fault, nobody else's, right? That's I think, the presence of, what's Jerry Jeudy talking about? It's too, I guess what I'm saying, it felt too animated to some, right? So I have zero problem. If people knew what was set up and down those sidelines that you don't see,
right,
or they just see or heard, you'd be shocked. It's how quickly you get over it, can move on from it, and who's thick-skinned enough to be able to get in somebody's face and you take it, and then when to say enough's enough, move on. Now, I like that 55 jumped in there and said, enough, dude, keep moving.
Right.
You said your piece, keep it. That tells
veteran.
Me they're defending their guy. I'm all for it.
And that is.
I don't have a problem with the passion.
Who's been their center for years.
That's right. And he's like, okay, enough, man. You've said enough. Now get on. You don't need to belabor this point. Get your ass moving. My only issue with this, Eggs, now if this is Cooper Kupp or this is Justin Jefferson going to Brosmer over the weekend, or even J.J. McCarthy, if he has planned. Opening 2 ears and one mouth, young quarterback. I watch Chris Carter do this regularly, veteran and rookie. And you know why it was okay? Because when Chris spoke, Chris was not going to go out and do anything he didn't tell you were going to get done. Because he performed on the field, off the field. So there was respect that came in that you didn't take it personal. You know, you're going back and forth. They had plenty of disagreements, but the optics didn't matter. Why? Because the Hall of Famer is telling you this because he sees it. So there's a respect, kind of like when Rodgers says it as opposed to Tua, we're taking Rodgers and Tua gets blamed. They're like, what are you doing, dude?
Right.
You don't have enough elbow grease in this thing to be able to say that. In this case, my only issue is Jerry Jeudy's worrying about more. Now, if they're communicating, dude, I'm running this 15-yard dig route and you got to throw the ball on time, I get it. And Shedeur can also say, well, dude, if you're running a 15-yard dig route, don't break it at 12, don't roll it to 17, 15's friggin' 15. They go back and forth. Rookie quarterback, this was one of my favorite things, because I love the fact that Shadur finally stood up and said, okay, dude, here's what I'm telling you. And that, one of my favorite things about the game, he didn't do, I mean, they throw a lot of underneath stuff, didn't really have a chance. He made a couple poor decisions, made a couple good plays. They were, they got their ass handed to him. They weren't any good. Yeah. But it tells me the leadership that Shadur, even through the struggles, there's a leadership quality that he has, which I like. The only thing with Jerry Jeudy is, dude, can't line up offsides. You can't, when you catch a ball 2 weeks ago, dick around and all of a sudden, because you're being casual, guy strips it. You can't drop balls in any advance. If you're going to be this guy who's going to be this animated, because the whole world's looking at you, wave your arms. You know what they're thinking? The hell's Jerry Jeudy ripping into a rookie quarterback? Maybe he needs to soft sell it. And some guys are fragile and need soft sold and an arm run. And some guys need a foot there. I can take you putting a foot in my ass because, well, I've seen it before. Some others can't. In this case, I think Shadur can handle it. He jumped back up. His lineman jumps up. Good. It's a disagreement. Move on. But for Jerry Jeudy, one thing I would say to Jerry Jeudy, I love the energy. I get the passion with you two young guys. One's been in the league a little longer. One's new. The passion, the communication. Better to have this than nobody talking shit at all. So I don't know what's going on. I'd like you to communicate. But the optics of it are poor, and here's why. Because Jerry Jeudy doesn't finish all the time, and that's a problem. Jerry Judy's had some, he's a Dow Joneser. Yep. So if you're going to do it, I don't mind the leader. You don't have to be the best player to be a leader. But if you're going to tell somebody to get something done, don't get mad when I come back at you and say, yeah, dude, but you know what? We got three drops today. We wouldn't have been in the situation you're talking about if you squeeze that football or whatever. So I love the passion. That part doesn't bother me. I don't give a shit about the optics, what the fan in the eighth row thinks. But depending on what's said here, get over it quickly, your teammates, and move on, communicate. The big fella, step up and defend your quarterback. That's exactly what you should do.
Mm-hmm.
But in the process, Jerry, if you're going to teach it and preach it, you also got to live it on the field by making smart football decisions on time and doing it the right way.
The other thing I pointed out on Twitter, too, about this is when you look at this picture that's up on the screen right now, look at the quarter and the time. And this happened right at the end of the third quarter. And I'm not sticking up for Jerry Jeudy because I agree 100%.
It's a two-score game, Segs. Just a two-score game.
Two-score game. But what if this is something that Jerry Judy's came at him twice about in the first two quarters softly and said, hey, this. And second quarter, hey, again, this. And then third time, now you come to the sideline as a veteran, as a wide receiver. Okay, now it's time to let the young guy know, like, this is what I said, and you're still doing this, and it's costing us. I get it. So that's where I'm coming at it. Maybe I'm wrong, but I just.
No, you're not wrong, because you don't, like, and we don't know the conversation. Right. What if the same that Shadur, I don't know, Shadur or Jeudy, if it was going the other way, I'd say the same thing.
You're right.
Like you said, you put your arm around him as you're coming off the field, hey, man, you know, the adjustment on this is this. And you've told him twice. And it's costing you. Then the third time, the emotion, shit. If this ain't a library, I need you to communicate. If you're thin skinned, then you're in the wrong sport anyway.
Right.
But the optics, oh my gosh, you're arguing, stop it. But if he told him in soft, so that's what we don't know. That's why I'm always skeptical to how deep can I take this conversation? Right. Because it may have been, listen, if you tell your kid to show up on time, the first time you're not going to the dance. The second time I'm taking your phone away. The third time, you guess what? The third time, I'm taking you out of sports or whatever it is that you're going to punish a kid.
Yeah.
And it has to be a little more. And listen, I know everybody says, oh, just give him a time. Your dog, you know, pees on the floor after it's not a puppy anymore just because it got lazy and then does it again. Then the next time you're probably going to give him a little pat on the rear end and say, listen, we're going outside. You're staying outside a little longer until you go. Well, here in this case, in sports related, if he told him a bunch of times, at some point in time, you may have to change the decibel and the animated part of it to get your point across.
Right.
I'm okay with that. It's football. It's just, what was the point of conversation? But I do like the fact that Shadur just didn't set their ticket, stand up and get back in it.
I do too.
And the optics may look at the lineman and then go about your business. And the key here is, more than anything, is what's next. How did it affect going forward? What's next? But people that are all mad when players argue on the sideline and coaches, If you don't know, you never will, because I got news for you. Stuff like this happens all the time. It's just when the camera picks it up, somebody's got to be in the wrong. Hell, they may have both, after that off camera, laughed their ass off. Who knows? Yes. I'm just saying it was animated, and animated means it's wrong. Animated doesn't always mean wrong, man. Passion's a good thing. And I'd like Jerry Jeudy to play with more passion, and I'm okay with that.
Yes, 100% agree. He's got to, you know, as someone said here, Jared, walk that walk. You know, you got to walk it, you know, and I agree with that. He's been a disappointment for as good as he was at Alabama. He's got to show up every Sunday.
You know what happens, Segs, too, when you walk it? Is like, right, when you've walked it or continue to walk it, then we allow you that,
you get
that
a latitude.
Sure, sure, because we know you're going to go out and do your gig. But the first thing, if put it this way, I can promise you right now, give me a veteran receiver that's played in the last few years. If that was who's Devontae. Alabama receiver? What's that?
I was going to say Devontae Adams.
Who was that? Who was in Cleveland for the Dallas receiver, former first round pick from Alabama, who was in Cleveland?
Amari Cooper.
Yeah, Amari Cooper. If that was Amari Cooper at this stage of his career, nobody'd have a problem with it. You know what they'd say? Amari shows up, runs the right route, plays his ass off, and he's just letting Shadur know. And Shadur and the offensive lineman probably wouldn't have stood up. He'd have sat there and let it go because we're having banter. I think it's the fact that one doesn't walk it enough, the other's a rookie, then he stands, the optics just wrong. But the conversation may have been something moving forward that's going to help this group get better. I don't have a problem with the passion at all, and I sure as hell don't have a problem with somebody cussing out or getting after it. And the fact that Shadur finally stood up and said, no, here's how we're doing, because this is what I see. That's what good leadership is. You don't always have to be right. You just have to walk it.
And the other thing was, too, it's not like they're in each other's faces just screaming, you know, obscenities and shit like that. No, they're pointing.
Somebody thinks they're going to get in a fist fight. Yeah,
they're pointing at the pad saying, no, good. You know, they're clearly talking about football. And that's where I think it's okay. It's okay to have a discussion. And if it's been said a few times and maybe my point's not getting across, well, I'm going to give you my point. And then if you want to give your point, yeah, fine.
And if you notice, what the big fella do? Let him get his point across a couple times. Then finally said, okay, you don't need to beat this down. Let's keep it moving, right? Got it in. And okay, now let's soak it in and move forward and get over it. They'll get over it, Jerry. But he'll get more respect on the outside from the optics when he's walking it all the time and playing like he did at Alabama on a consistent basis. Hence why he's still not in Denver.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
Hence why he's not there. But if he was, because his talent was enormous, but he is underachieved at every level. With that talent, we want people to not to underachieve. What is Isaiah couldn't disagree more about what? The Jeudy thing or the he thinks yeah, it's okay?
It was definitely in the Jeudy thing.
Yeah, I was just trying to answer what he's because we like to give answer some of the questions or some of the statements, but optics, people that are removed from the optics on the sidelines that are bothered when two guys get in each other's face, you just don't know them. I'm not saying Isaiah doesn't, but if that's the case, you just don't know because
I mean how many times
that happens all the time.
See Tom Brady yelling at people
all the time.
All the time.
And not even when he was young. Well, even though when he was yelling at offensive linemen or when saw Peyton, they didn't get up and walk away from him. They sat there and look up. Why? Because his approach and leadership, although sometimes you're pissed, there's a respect that they allow you the latitude to get in their face. Because linemen are pretty tough, thick skin too.
How many times did we see Brady yelling at Josh McDaniels or Bill O'Brien and them two just going at it? I mean, and you could always knew with Bill O'Brien, his face would turn bright red, his head's red. And I mean, they would go at it. So, I mean, it happens a lot. And sometimes the cameras.
Jeudy's problem is that if he was a pro, if he was Puka or if he was Jamar Chase, not spitting, but Jamar Chase, we'd all be saying, hey man, maybe you should take a little lesson from this.
Yeah.
And listen to Jerry Jeudy. But the problem is that he hasn't lived up to it, so we judge him a little different. And guys who've got a little more elbow grease in it and performance, you're going to listen more, even though, you know, whether I was a leader or not, you're going to listen more to what Troy Aikman has to say than me because he's done it longer and been more successful doing it. So there you go.
Yeah, for sure. All right, before we get out of here, as we do every single day, our bet of the day, Monday Night Football. We got the New York Giants, Jackson Dart back from the concussion. They travel to New England to take on the Patriots. Patriots are a touchdown and a hook favorite, 7.5 with a 46.5 point total.
So I don't know how you feel, but I just think New England's right now as complete as we have in the AFC. I do. Jackson Dart's energy, I love it. I friggin' love his energy. And I would imagine he's going to play with a ton of it. And they'll play, I mean, they should play hard. I just think New England is not, I don't think this is fake. This is not fool's gold.
Right.
Give me New England. I would probably take the under in this game, but I think New England wins this by more than a touchdown and a hook.
Okay, yeah. See, I like New England as well. I think they win. I think this is a double-digit game, you know, when it comes to the end score. With
you like the over.
Yes, I like the over. I think this is going to be where, you know, New England goes out here and they're going to score a majority of the points. Let's put it that
way. Yeah, I don't think the Giants are going to get much on the board, though. That's the problem.
Yeah, so I'm talking like Patriots are putting up 35-plus here tonight. And
so you're looking at a 35-10 type game or 38-14.
Yes. And, you know, this is for New England to jump back ahead of the Denver Broncos, who, you know, and New England still has their bye to come. I think that's next week, which is crazy to think that some teams had their bye.
We shouldn't have had byes in December. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's nuts to me, but.
I'd like buys to be done by December 6th. That's just me. And then now it's football all the way through.
Right. Right. So, but when we come back tomorrow, we've got to talk about Texas A&M laying an egg against Texas. We got to talk about, does that Texas Longhorn team deserve to be in the discussion with three losses?
You're going to get a lot of banter on that one, brother.
Should Notre Dame be in over Miami? That's another discussion we have to have. Oh, and then there's, I have them all written down here. We've got like 9 new jobs we haven't talked about when you look at all the hirings that we had over the last couple of days. And then we've got another 10 openings as of this moment, if I have them all written down, which I probably don't. I probably am missing one or two. So, I mean, there's a lot
of college football coaching. What's the best job left now? Penn State? Gotta be, right?
Which is just, that is just... Well, there was some talk today about the BYU coach. I'm blanking on his name.
It's Satake.
Yes, yes. That being a possibility. And then there's some whispers about maybe if he doesn't take the job, Jeff Brohm leaving Louisville to go to Penn State. Jeff Brohm feels like Penn State's like 9th choice. So if they're going to Jeff Brohm, something's not right there.
But if you're Jeff Brohm, and no disrespect to Louisville, you have to take that job. You have a better chance to win a title at Penn State. Don't let your ego get in the way. They got to you. It's your job.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you go get it. But then we'd have Kentucky and Louisville both open at the same time because Kentucky paid or is going to pay Mark Stoops like $35 million to go away. So, I mean, damn, I just wish I could be a college coach and just have a big, you know, buyout and just get fired. Just go lose 9 games and give me 30.
Negotiate a big deal and then don't worry about it the rest of the way. It's not a bad gig, right?
Because if I'm one of those guys, give me that money and you'll never hear from me again. I'm off on an island just drinking Mai Tais and hanging out.
Loving life. And then you get to judge people on Monday on a football game without you being the one that's getting judged anymore. Isn't that cool?
And then NFL, we got to talk about the Chiefs. We got to talk about the Lions because
that was disappointing about the Chiefs, huh, bud?
Yeah. And the Lions didn't look good against Green Bay. So there's some NFL teams we got to talk about. Ravens, they were gross. I mean,
in Detroit, Dan's shoving fourth down people's throat, man. And I love it, dude. Dan Campbell, I love him. Oh, man, that Detroit looks a little different. I guess Ben Johnson's winning at every step, isn't he?
Yes.
I leave, they're not as good. I'm there and we're better and we're the number one seed. Yeah, it goes to show you, Ben Johnson, there's a reason why he was such a hot commodity, man.
Yeah, and Dan Campbell with all the fourth down stuff. You have Kevin Stefanski going for fourth down from his own 29 with a tight end, basically keeper, just snap it to the tight end and keep it. With when the game was close, it was like 10-8.
That's like my favorite. You're a midfield, it's 3rd and 7, and you have a halfback pass. So you put the ball in the hand of a guy who throws it once a year, as opposed to your quarterback on 3rd. So I just have never, not in that case, but you do it. I've just never understood if I'm going down, I'm going down with the guy who can throw the best with the ball in his hand, or a guy who's used. We can't even get NFL quarterbacks to get under center and get a clean snap. Why in the world would I put somebody else in there to do it? It just, dude, there's some issues going on in the league, elementary school issues that even the NFL players can't handle, which is hard to believe.
And then we got another great Tuesday of college basketball. I've watched more college basketball than I think I've watched anything over the last, 2 weeks. College basketball has been awesome to start this year. And maybe it's just because my Wolverines are the best team in the country probably right now. But, I mean, there is a lot of good teams out there. And college basketball has been fun. And we got some good ones tomorrow night, too. Plus the college football playoff rankings. How far does Texas A&M fall? So much to talk about that I don't think we have enough time tomorrow to hit it all.
That's why we got 5 days this week. And oh, by the way, LaFleur out Campbell in Detroit. I was about to say, I told you going in six, pick the over under on going for it on fourth downs.
Yeah.
Well, there you get it. Isaiah, relax. We talk about your Packers a lot. Yeah. Talk about the Pack. We don't have to talk about them every day, my man. We know how much you do. You slobber over them. So do we at times. Quarterback's really good. It's a really good team, and their defense is really good, and their receivers are good enough to beat good teams. So yes, they're good, but we gotta, you know, it's like politics. We really don't have to give equal to both sides, do we, Sex? So there you go. I know, Isaiah. Slow down, brother. We love you too, man. We love you
too. And just so you know, Myles Garrett got another sack. So
there's a shock. If the D would just hand him the award now, please.
Yeah. That sack was against Trent Williams, and he made Trent Williams look awful on that play. So,
and Trent Williams is a friggin' freak show himself, right? Miles Garrett is just.
We're going to be talking about him along with Lawrence.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he can bench press the team bus, but he can also run like a doggone guy who's got wiggle in the you know, he can move. And he plays the run and the pass. The guy's a freak. Unbelievable. And he's getting better. Every year he gets better.
He's going to be Mike Trout, where we just never see him in meaningful games.
Yeah, unfortunately for him, and it had nothing to do with injury. It has everything to do with just, a bad football team that can't score.
Yep.
There you go.
All right, well, we'll be back to our normal time tomorrow, 1 p.m. Eastern, noon Central. Thanks for, making time for us this afternoon later than normal.
And by the way, DJ, Dr. J, you're right. Trent did hold up, and I think Trent Williams is as good as we have over there. He held up. I mean, giving up one sack to Myles Garrett is a win.
Trust me. Yeah.
That's a huge win. And that's considering. Now, Trent, if you get into a one-on-one fist fight there in a game, they'd be a blast to watch practice against each other every single snap, because you got a dominant, physical, nasty guy on offense and he's nasty, Trent is, with great feet and great punch. And then you got a guy who you've got to dress in a phone booth to block him. That'd be fun to watch practicing against each other every friggin' day. It's
100%. So make sure you go to YouTube, like and subscribe to the channel at Unpaved Sean Salisbury. We will be back tomorrow. Peace.
Unpaved Sean Salisbury here for bringing authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.